So tonight, we're going to focus on the second precept or second mindfulness training. It's referred to in both ways. And it's particularly interesting that I'm talking about this tonight. If you're not familiar with the second precept, basically in its barest form, it is do not steal. But as you will see as we explore this tonight, it's so much deeper and richer than that. But the do not steal part really hit home today because today's my daughter's birthday. She lives in California, so I waited till around 8 o'clock her time to call. And as she answered the phone, you know, she said, "Oh, Dad, I'm just opening your card right now." And I had written on the envelope, "Don't open till September 14th, right? I didn't want her to open it early because there was a gift card in there from Kohl's, where she likes to shop. So I'm talking to her, you know, "What are you doing? Anything special?" Blah, blah, blah. And then I said, "Hey, you know, I know you like to shop at Kohl's." She goes, "Yeah." There's this pause, you know, like she's trying to understand why I brought this up, because the gift card was missing. I said, "There's no gift card?" And she goes, "No." And then she said, "Dad, did you scotch tape the back of the envelope?" I said, "Nope." So I have my theory, and believe it or not, I'm pretty convinced it was stolen by somebody in the Postal Service, because I put it in the mailbox literally 30 minutes before the guy came to pick it up. And anyway, I'm in conversation with Kohl's now. Actually talked to a very nice man today in Nicaragua. And because I actually had been to the city he lived in, I think he went the extra mile, and I may actually get the money recouped, I guess is the word. So we'll see. But, you know, I was really upset. I don't get stealing. I don't really get it. I don't get like, "Oh, that's yours, but I want it, so I'm just going to take it." Not that I haven't stolen in my life, because when I was younger, I did definitely do that. But, you know, I have come to understand over time the price that I pay when I take something that's not freely offered. So, you know, that's a more expanded view. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. And, you know, many of us Westerners, we sort of equate this second precept with that commandment. You know, if any of you were raised Christian, "Thou shalt not steal." And I've talked about this before, but there really is a major difference between the Ten Commandments and the precepts. First of all, there's nobody up there behind a white cloud that's going to smite our ass, you know, if we break one of the commandments. But it's not about rules being imposed. It's about a training. It's a form of training. And the longer I've been practicing and the more time I've spent around teachers, the deeper my understanding is of how critically important practicing the precepts is for my evolution, my transformation, on my path to being free from suffering. And I've also kind of gotten on a mission, you know, of really wanting to sort of impart the seriousness of and the value of practicing the precepts. And for a lot of people, they're not really that interested. Oh, I mean, we've got like 12 people, 13 people here. You know, some of it may be the traffic, some of it may be something else, or it may be a precept. I'm not interested in hearing about the precepts. There's nothing sexy about that. You know, let's talk about, you know, I don't know, something else. The stages of enlightenment or something. Maybe, you know, that's why there aren't more people here. But anyway, the precepts of Buddhism are associated with the right action factor of the Eightfold Path. So just a quick review. For 45 years, the Buddha taught basically one thing and one thing only: the cause of suffering and the cessation of suffering, the cause and relief of suffering. And in his very first teaching, he taught the Four Noble Truths. And the cause of suffering, the truth of suffering, the cause of suffering, the relief of suffering, and the path of the way out. And the path of the way out, the Fourth Noble Truth, is the Eightfold Path. And he basically laid out, okay, here's how you do it. You know, you could go to Barnes & Noble and there's all these books, and Buddhism can seem really complicated, but really it comes down, if we really understand the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, then that's all we need, really. I mean, yeah, there's the Brahma-Viharas and the hindrances and other things, but this is the essence. So the way the Eightfold Path is laid out, it's broken up into three areas. Three of the Eightfold Path are mindfulness, which are effort, concentration, and mindfulness. Two of them are wisdom, which is right view and right intention. And three of them are related to ethics. And that is, did I say action? I think I said action, mindfulness, and it was effort. Effort, mindfulness, and concentration are the mindfulness part. The ethics part are effort and, or no, action, livelihood, and speech. And those three are part of the five precepts. The five precepts, basically, the first one is don't kill, the second one, don't steal, the third one is refraining from any kind of sexual misconduct, the fourth one is speech, and the fifth is refraining from intoxicants. So the second one is not stealing. And this is part of the, it's not only part of the Eightfold Path, it's one of the precepts. So, and the moral conduct or ethics are really the cornerstone upon which the whole Buddhist practice is taught. Because without a foundation of ethical practice, it's very difficult to cultivate any kind of concentration and develop any kind of insight or wisdom. So, I've talked about this in other talks, but the Eightfold Path, the three aspects, ethics, concentration, and wisdom, they're like a three-legged stool. They all feed each other. They all support each other. And it's also been referred to as like an eight-lane highway, so we move from one to the other. But the real foundation of it is the ethics. So let's talk about application. Most of this practice is pretty obvious. You know, it's just not stealing, not taking things that aren't ours. But it's so easy to rationalize, isn't it? I mean, I remember one time I went to an ATM and the ATM gave me an extra 20. You know, I was taking out 100 and it gave me 120. Did I run inside and go, guess what? This is yours. No, I pocketed it. That was a long time ago. You know, we think, we justify it, we rationalize it. It's a big bank. You know, they got enough. And so on. And I'm sure you can think of other examples, getting too much change back, you know, from a big store and so on. But there's other aspects too. We might think about, what about the products that we buy that come from exploited labor? Like I mentioned Nicaragua earlier. You know, there's a lot of clothing and products that come from a place like Nicaragua where people are being severely underpaid. So is that taking what's freely offered? See, the interesting thing about this practice is we can start looking at these kinds of nuances. We might, if we're practicing this with strong intention, we might think about not wasting natural resources. Wasting food, wasting water. I'm like this fanatic about recycling, and it's probably a bit of a anal thing with me, but I mean, I'll take an empty toilet roll and take it home and recycle it at home. You know, one of those little things, you know, just because I don't want to throw it in the wastebasket. I think that comes from living in Germany for 2 years. You know, what about going through our closet and looking at clothing and going, I haven't worn this in 3 years. Maybe somebody could use this warm coat. See, so there's that other aspect of this precept, which we'll get into a little bit more, and that's the aspect of generosity. You know, it's looking at things like our own greed, our own grasping. So we just had this storm last week, right? And we knew it was coming, and we didn't know how bad it was going to be. Did any of you run to the store and stock up on extra stuff? You know, thinking, I'm going to run out. A lot of people did. I got to tell you, the day before they knew the weather was coming in, the wind and the power going off, you did not want to work in food service in this town. You know, because I've been there, and you get slammed. But, you know, just thinking, if there's a big winter storm coming, do I really need to go and buy all the food when actually I have enough and maybe somebody else needs it more than I do? So greed is one of the three poisons, along with anger and ignorance. And this kind of greed, when it arises, really leads to attachment and suffering. Zen Master Wu Bong said, the second precept deals with taking things that are not given. This is more than just not stealing. It means not coveting things in the material, psychological, or spiritual realms. Desire stems from a feeling of incompleteness. This precept teaches us to accept ourselves wholly, and to make this total acceptance is to become complete, to attain the Buddha state. So practicing the precepts can be thinking more about, beyond just what the rules are about. Learn to really pay close attention and noticing when we fall short, because we will fall short. That's the thing about the precepts, is that, I mean, there's some disagreement about this. There are some monks who will say, no, absolutely, you can keep these to the letter. Well, think about the first precept, thou shalt not, I just said it like a commandment, not killing, you know, harmlessness. I mean, just driving here, I probably killed some insects, right? So the thing is, we will fall short on all the precepts at times, but that's why it's a practice. It's a training. So let's talk about generosity, because that's the positive aspect. All of the precepts have a positive aspect to them, or a positive training element to them. And generosity relates to the second precept. So we can learn to be more ethical and more skillful, and Buddhism uses the term skillful to denote actions performed on the basis of wholesome states of mind. And unskillful relates to the opposite. And hopefully we strive to develop a capacity of ethics where we start eliminating unskillful behavior altogether. So each of the five precepts has a positive and a negative form. The negative forms advise us what not to do. They set alarm bells ringing when we're about to do or say anything that would be unskillful. But the positive form expressed the general principles that hopefully we're aiming at, skillful means. And this practice of generosity that we're talking about has been the foundation of Buddhism since the time of the Buddha. So, since the time of the Buddha, for example, we've had the practice of dana, D-A-N-A, where the teachings are given for free, and those receiving them give back. If you go to a Theravadin monastery, they go on alms route. They go out and get food in the middle of the day. It's the community that supports them. It's this act of generosity that is such a critical part of the Dharma and has been since the very beginning. This practice of giving freely without expecting anything in return. And practicing generosity, from my point of view, is a basic way to experience freedom and a sense of peacefulness. I had a teacher, a spiritual teacher. He wasn't Buddhist, at least he didn't identify himself as such. He told me once, he said, if you're ever depressed, if you're ever feeling down, the best way to get out of that funk is to give. And that's really true. I'm sure probably all of you have had that experience. So, in this giving, in this letting go, it really helps weaken and reverse our attachments, our longings, our grasping. And in this process of doing it, we really cultivate a calm center that becomes stronger. What can we give? There's a lot of things that we can give. Dana, we talked about. Certainly now with these horrific events in Texas, Louisiana, and Florida, and so on, there's so many opportunities to give and support these people whose lives have been so uprooted and destroyed. In the Caribbean, you know, outside our boundaries. But there's other things. There's wisdom and experience. In the Buddha's teachings, the highest form of generosity is to give your wisdom in both your words and in your behavior. If you're a teacher, you're in a position both to demonstrate wisdom with your actions and to speak wisely. If you're a parent or grandparent, as some of you are, caring for the children gently and with patience is a form of sharing your wisdom. I regret I never met any of my four grandparents. They all died before I was born. So I didn't have that opportunity to learn from them. Speaking, simply acting and speaking with kindness, truthfully, considering what's best for others is to offer wisdom. Helping people stand on their own feet. This is practicing the second precept. Another way to do it is offering attention and respect. Here's something you can try. For one day, try offering respectful attention to everybody you meet or talk to. Everybody. Respectful attention. Look at the other person's point of view. Let the person next to you at work, at a store, at a bus station, wherever it is, let them be, in that moment, the most important person in the world. Even if you don't see a smile, offer one. When you're going through a checkout line, do you call the person by name? This is a practice I started developing. Is I'll look at the name tag, and they usually have one, and call them by name. And I have seen it just change the whole person's countenance, you know, just being valued as a person. This is a way of giving, of generosity. A man once asked Mother Teresa what he could give since he had nothing. And she said, "You can always give a smile." And I had an opportunity to meet Mother Teresa back in February of 1992. And there's a whole wonderful story that goes along with it. It was in Calcutta, but I'll just go right to the punchline, basically. And that was, I had about a 5-minute conversation with her, and it was really clear to me for those 5 minutes, as far as she was concerned, I was the most important person in the world. Where are you from? How long are you here? Are you having a good time? Are you staying healthy? Where are you going? Do you have a family? Oh, tell me about your children. She held my hands and looked. She's just an old thing. Held my hands and looked up at me. It's like, whoa, what a gift. Obviously, you can give things in money, and it's an opportunity to see how tied down we are by our possessions. Always look at your intention in giving during an act and afterwards. Are you really wanting to improve someone else's happiness? Or are we trying to gain favor? Or maybe play a one-upmanship? Are you responding to some egoic inner need? Or really giving fully from the heart? These are questions to ask. You know, what is our intention? What is our motivation? But even with mixed motivation, there still is that element of relief that happens. So, talking about the benefits of the second precept, this precept can be a wonderful source of happiness in many ways. Just knowing that we've not hurt others by taking from them in any form, the happiness, their happiness, this is one thing that comes. Knowing that we're a person that's regarded as trustworthy and safe. Knowing that we're someone that no one fears will steal from them. This can be a cause of great personal happiness for ourselves. And this sense of joy, of blamelessness and contentment when we don't have any remorse. When we're motivated by a sense of shared humanity, living by this precept can really be seen as a great gift to others. We live in a world where all people are family. And just as we wouldn't steal from our own parents or children, why would we take anything from anyone unless it's really offered? A heart at ease just doesn't steal. So by wording the precept, not taking what is not given, the Buddhist tradition sort of sets a higher standard of clarity than just simply not stealing. Things have to be really clearly and freely offered before we take something. So this sort of rules out any kind of ambiguity, exploitation, intimidation. Any of you a boss? What if you ask someone who works for you to do something? All right? Do they do it because they really want to, or because they feel there's some kind of retribution if they don't? Some employees may feel they just can't say no to any request. Or being in a relationship, spouses, partners may agree to do things they don't want to do for fear of straining the relationship. Are we taking advantage of that? Silence doesn't necessarily mean consent. So we might ask ourselves, if the other person is doing something out of a sense of coercion or really out of their own free will. I was with a group of people last night, and a woman was talking about how she had this neighbor who had a very strong personality. And the person who was talking is someone who you might describe as being somewhat meek, you know. And she said the neighbor one time approached her about buying a power washer. Said, hey, how about you and me, we go in together and buy this power washer? Well, she didn't want to do it. But she didn't want to say no, you know. I mean, she went ahead and did something she didn't want to do. So in a sense, there was a form of subtle coercement there. And it wasn't really being conscious. In a way, it was a form of taking something that wasn't really offered, right? So within the Buddhist tradition, there's a ritual. And I've gone through this ritual. I did this ritual at Plum Village with Thich Nhat Hanh after a 21-day retreat. They call them the five mindfulness trainings. They don't refer to them as the precepts. And so I followed a ritual to take the five mindfulness trainings. And it was my intention, and it's been my intention ever since, to really live up to that. That was in 2000 that I did that. So when we take on this training, this precept can kind of be broken down into three different aspects to this training: restraint, character, and understanding. And we'll take a look at each one. So the first one's restraint. So training ourselves to refrain from causing harm, not taking what is not offered, we avoid confusing, harming, or upsetting others. And we ourselves benefit from having a really clear conscience in knowing that we haven't caused harm for anybody else, and the satisfaction of not giving in to greed. So training and restraint is a support for practicing mindfulness. When we hold back from the impulse to take, we have the opportunity to look carefully at the nature of the impulse. So if we have an impulse to take that extra change that's given to us when the clerk makes a mistake, or that extra $20 bill that the ATM spit out, or to take advantage of someone offering something when instinctually we just know that they're not really wanting to do that. When we do that, we get a chance to look at our own motivation. We get a chance to look at our own impulse, to really look deeply at what's behind this. What kind of justifications, what kind of stories do we have in our minds? So this is really starting to get some insight into our own habit patterns and how our minds work, and how sometimes we do things without really reflecting on that. And it's an exercise in restraint like this that really cultivates mindfulness, really self-awareness, what our motivation. And it really helps us kind of stay on the path of non-greed. So that's restraint. The second aspect of the training is character, and just really developing our own character. And this practice of acting in the second precept, this acting in generosity, it really transforms us from the inside out. As we behave in practicing generosity and goodwill, we become ethical. Reb Anderson is a Zen teacher that I studied with when I was living in a Zen center in California. He called following these precepts living upright. In fact, he wrote a book called Being Upright. And when I think about that, I think upright. You know, that's like an image to me. you know, when I'm living a life ethically, I feel like I can really carry myself upright with a sense of pride. Not bad pride, not, you know, but just a sense of, yeah, you know, I'm really acting in an ethical way, you know. And being upright also helps us develop greater mindfulness and empathy and equanimity. And it really helps cultivate an ethical sensitivity. Every inclination to take or want something can be an occasion to practice greater mindfulness. You know, it can be done by constantly bringing greater attention to the subtle forms of taking what is not giving, like dominating a conversation, pushing to the front of a line. Today, as I was driving up Merriman, there's a one spot just as you start coming up to that lake where there's a right-hand lane, and it's supposed to be designed for people turning right. It's a great opportunity to shoot up there and then cut in. Am I taking what is not given? You know, and I had that impulse. So just like watching that habit of mind, it's like, you know, where is that coming from? What kind of fear do I have, you know? How do I separate myself from others and want to put myself above them? You know, it's really, really building character. And learning to train in contentment, replacing greed and desire with a sense of satisfaction with what we already have. You know, I think contentment is one of the most underappreciated supports for training in the path of freedom. And that's one thing I'm very happy about in my life, is I have a lot of contentment. You know, other people could look at me from the outside and they see a guy who's maybe doesn't seem to have a lot, but, you know, my last birthday, last month, my son, you know, what do you want, Dad? And he ended up giving me a gift card, and I haven't even used it yet. It's for JCPenney, and I've walked through there twice, once by myself, and then I took Margaret with me, and there's nothing I need. It's like, I don't need another jacket. I got a jacket. I got enough T-shirts. I don't need more shoes. It's like, I still have the card. I don't, you know, it's like, I'm just happy with what I have. You know, it's a good feeling. So we talked about restraint and character. The last one is understanding. So in addition to training in restraint and character, we can cultivate understanding. And internally, this means understanding our own motivations, our values, and our needs. Interpersonally, it means understanding the consequences of our actions on others. It means taking the time to learn about the consequences of our acquisitions and consumption as they extend beyond what we can just see. You know, how does the impact, you know, how do the choices that I make in my day-to-day life impact globally, impact the community? So I think that's all I'm going to say about understanding. I've kind of woven that in other parts already, but these areas of ethical training, restraint, character, and understanding really overlap. And so what I'm hoping to impart is that the whole precept of not taking what's not freely offered is so much bigger. You know, it takes on such a bigger role if we can just sort of expand and look at generosity and see how that really cultivates a good heart. You know, if you've ever been around the Dalai Lama or heard talks by him, one thing that he keeps coming back to again and again is cultivating a good heart. And I think more than anything else, that's what I really want to have, is I just want to have a good heart. You know, I think if I can really do that, a lot of other things will fall into place.